Welcome to As You Wish Talk Radio. I'm your host, James Dillon, and we are broadcasting live from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington, home of E. SETI and the Self-Mastery Earth Institute, otherwise known as Paranormal and UFO Central. There are so many things I'd like to get into tonight, but we just had a phenomenal event here, and just about Don was our host was here, and BBS Radio, and the lineup was just incredible. International speakers were here. We had Nick Bajic come in. A lot of you know Brooks Agnew, who has a show also on this network, and Wendell Stevens. You know, brought on an awesome performance with all of the UFOs around the world. I could go on and on about this conference, but it was just phenomenal. You know, people, it was a standing room only, you know, conference with standing ovations after each speaker. And it was just, you know, we told everybody, one thing you can't say is we didn't offer you a warm welcome, because the temperatures up here were, you know, in the 90s and on above, and then the building itself doesn't have air conditioning. But we were amazed at just the mastery of the audience itself. They loved it. They stuck through each speaker. They were just glued to their seats because of the information that each speaker was delivering. And overall, it was just a phenomenal event. One of the most phenomenal things that we had, and Don is going to be having them up on our site real quick. If you click on As You Wish Talk Radio, if you're on the internet later, you'll be able to get to see just a couple of the photos, and the rest of the photos we'll have up on our site at www.eseti.org. But the UFOs did come. They came right on cue. They came in right at the beginning of the sky watches and on almost every night. They lit up the sky. They powered up. They're just awesome. And they're flying pretty much both behind the back of the ranch here and in the front of the ranch, too. Some of the people that were in the front area were used to do our sky watching, missed some of the ones that flew real low in the back of the ranch, but a lot of people saw them, and we actually got some pretty amazing photographs. Some of the phenomenon that we were photographing is people were waiting for a big ship to come down and land, and, you know, the doors to open and some strange being to walk out, you know, for contact. But we did have some very large ships fly right over the ranch, and a lot of people got footage and film of these ships. But the most amazing thing is the Skywatch group. When we took a photograph of the group itself, it was wall-to-wall light spheres all around the group. So ultra-dimensional contact was happening with those who were sensitive enough to feel what was happening all around them. And it was actually caught on film. It's just amazing the support we had. It was like an interdimensional support crew with you know, wall-to-wall ultra-dimensional beings, you know, filling the entire field of these light spheres of every color you can imagine and size and shape. And again, we caught all of this on film. And we actually had a metallic sphere that we got a picture of a metallic ship sitting right out in the middle of the field, hovering over the field. So just about every avenue was covered as far as documenting the events that happened in the building itself. There was incredible light spheres in the building itself, and large golden light spheres, you know, hanging over the heads of the speakers and kind of inspiring them, you know, in their talk, which I think why each and every one of them gave such an incredible performance. I mean, they were totally energized and downloaded with wonderful information. Some of the physicists here, I'll let Brooks tell people his own story soon, but Brooks Agnew had a phenomenal experience here. He said, I'm a physicist. I need to look at the data. You know, I need to see the data and see the proof and the evidence. And he got quite a wake-up call here because he was down with all kinds of data.
James, we have the pictures up.
Excuse me, what?
The pictures
okay,
are
yeah,
up.
Yeah, we have the pictures up now. So you can click on As You Wish Talk Radio, and just a couple of those pictures are up to show you some of the activity here. The the overall energy of the place was phenomenal. And another one of the amazing things that happened is we had one person after another come up and speak about miracle healings that happened here. And with their contact and camping and sleeping in the field, it's truly a field of dreams. It's amazing what happens in this field. But people felt, you know, beings actually touched them on the shoulder. They felt surges of energy going through them. And, you know, there's people coming up to me saying, hey, I had all this pain in my arm. I've had it for years and it's gone. And they have no, you know, explanation for it, back pain. Internal intestinal problems, all kinds of things just miraculously seem to disappear with people. And I know it's a combination of things. People were really drinking down that superoxygenated water we had here, the Aquarius water, which really accelerates the healing process. But it's so much more than that. There was such an energy exchange here for those who were open to it that, again, there was just one miracle healing after another. We're still digging out after the event, you know, to have over 300 people, you know, show up. it was just amazing. And we're still kind of cleaning up after the aftermath of this event. But it turned out to be like a UFO Woodstock almost with some of the, you know, the best minds on the planet all, you know, delivering their message. Before I go too much further, I have a guest I want to bring on. His name is Jim, and he had some incredible experiences, not just at the conference, but he decided to go up on the mountain and do his own vision quest at the very area we were watching lights appear all over the mountain and strange phenomena that nobody could explain, strange light spheres. And some people call them earth lights, but there's much, much more to this phenomenon, as he'll tell us. But before we go on too much further, Jim, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Great. Jim, I understand you went up on the mountain for your own personal vision quest and for your own personal healing and to get some answers.
Yeah. My wife died in January, and I've been asking a lot of questions. And we had such a tight connection that she's actually still with me. And I've been reading Robert Monroe's books. I'm on his third book, Ultimate Journey. Mm-hmm. Towards the end, and I'm really wanting to have that experience, and I really haven't consciously. But when I was up on the mountain, the first night I was there, I had some phenomenal things happen that were really out of some bizarre things. That it would be bizarre to some people, but it was like I would find myself dropping into my body. And one thing that happened is I'd be looking over my head, and 30 feet away there was a saucer there with a ramp. And then I'd drop into my body, and I couldn't see it. So then I had another one where I was dropping in again, and I saw this, like, robot with kind of rounded corners off about 10 feet from me, just kind of looking around like a sentient being, but a robot. And then I was looking up at the sky, and I noticed there's the Milky Way, but there's this round area that's dark with two lights on both sides, and it was just right above me, and I go, this is a ship that's just kind of hanging out looking at me or observing me. And then the second night I was there, what happened was I moved to this other area up on top of this hill that I really felt I needed to be. And part of it was when I was dropping in again, because I never really have had like conscious astral experiences, but up there it seems like the veil is very, very thin. And what happened was I noticed there was an air vent, you know, on this other dimension. And I go, wow, they're just kind of like venting their structure under the mountains, but they're on top of the mountains. And then I noticed another time I woke up that same night, I'm looking up and there's this 10-foot high, thin, I couldn't make out features, but it was like almost like an abominable snowman, but not like a Sasquatch, but it wasn't. It was 10 feet high or taller, and it was very thin, but it was like a black shadow. And I went there because I wanted to learn. I wanted to open up. And I began to have telepathic communication with some beings that I've had in the past. It, like, reconnected. And one of the most phenomenal things I had was, because Jerry and I, she's still around me, and I know this. And I can talk to her whenever I need to. And it's the events that led up to that was that she chose to go into the light and come back. And I was lying down during a nap during the day because I didn't get a lot of sleep during the night. And I found myself, I was kissing her, and she was in my arms, and she was laying next to me. And all of a sudden, I was in my body, and my lips were moving, and my arm was in the same place, but she wasn't there. And I got that we still have this connection. And it doesn't matter that she doesn't have a body, but we still have this connection that's still growing. And that's one thing I got out of Robert Monroe's books, is that it goes on beyond our physical body. And it really gave me an opening to see that we're more than our bodies. And our experiences can go way beyond. And up in the mountain, one thing I became very aware of is that these beings are not just in the mountain. They're all over the mountain. And they're among us. And just because we can't see them doesn't mean they don't exist.
Mm-hmm. Now, drop it into the body for those who don't understand. Basically, you're doing an out-of-body experience where your soul or your spirit was hovering just outside the body, where you're experiencing all these other interdimensional realities.
Right. Yeah, I was. It was just bizarre because it's like I'm not consciously able to do this like some people, but I have what Robert Monroe put out, this thing called the Gateway Experience, to teach you, and I have it, but I haven't done it. My intention is to do it because I want to see Jerry, because we have this phenomenal connection. Well, I could walk in a store, I'd know where she was at, she'd lay next to me, and I could read her thoughts, and then she passed away. Well, I've realized from this experience, just in 4 days, not only that, but we can communicate with other beings, we can be on these other levels. It's a lot wider than the small spectrum that we actually experience.
So people don't really die, that's the illusion.
They don't, their physical body may dissipate and go away, but the experiences they take with them go way beyond that. And it's like, the part of the thing about being on the mountain was I had no belief system about what was going to happen. And I didn't let a belief system get in the way. That's what will lock people out of having experiences, that if they're afraid, because some of the things I saw would freak some people out. But my experience was, these beings aren't going to hurt me, because if they wanted to, they could have. Mm-hmm. But they're not there to do that. They're there for us, and we are there for them, in the sense of we can partake in their life as much as they can in ours if we so choose.
I think that's where a lot of the healings came from, and people said they felt a being
right there,
a presence there, and they actually felt themselves being touched on certain parts. You know, they'll be sitting and they feel like a hand on their knee or a hand on their back, or I was sitting out in the field and I felt a hand on my back, and you know, it was a master being, and he actually kind of pinched my shoulder, squeezed my shoulder a little bit, just to know they were with me.
They want to connect with us, I believe. And I believe they're not trying to be better or lesser. They're just trying to be with us on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of, I think, about acceptance of who we are from all the parts of who we are, and to connect with them on all the parts of who they are.
Do you think they're trying to teach us that, you know, we're not just these physical bodies, that we're actually a spirit that has a physical body? And
we're interdimensional, beyond what people can imagine, or some people, but we're way beyond just the physical, way, way, way beyond. And one thing I want to point out is I wasn't on any drugs or alcohol at the time. I was just very, you know, water. I mean, some people, you know, people have their own way, but I felt I had to be as clean as possible to do this.
You know, that water can be a very powerful drug.
Well, it just, there was no distortion what I felt, and I was there, because once Jerry passed away, I felt my place in life now is to serve and to learn, to open up to what possibilities there are, not to try to contrive, and this actually put me in a good place to be on the mountain, because I was open to whatever experience would happen. I wasn't trying to create it. It just was created there.
Exactly. I know people have had near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. I've had several myself.
Mm-hmm.
That they lose the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And when they lose the fear and they're ready to engage these other planes and dimensions, there has to be, first of all, a very strong desire and a fearlessness to do it, which seems to be something you've mastered there to have this experience. And a lot of people with near-death experiences have that same lack of fear, which allows them not to close down and to hang in there and have these multi-dimensional experiences and realize that, you know, they're not just a body, that there's You know, this dimension, this third dimension that we put all of our stock in, according to the latest physics, there's actually 11 dimensions. And if you look at all the life on this dimension alone, and all the myriad forms of beings and peoples and you know, plants and animals and everything, and then multiply that times 11, you can just imagine what's out there, and their worlds are just as physical to them because they're vibrating at that frequency. And then you multiply that times a billion, it's actually infinite, and then you have a better idea about, you know, the magnificence of the universe that we live in.
Right. It's multidimensional, vastly open to creative potential.
Yeah. Now, could you go into detail, a little bit more detail on some of the beings that you, I know you said you saw a tall, kind of a Yeti type looking
very thin.
Well, I
saw him, but the tall one was just kind of standing there walking towards me and kind of just looking at me. I got the sense he was just kind of observing me. And it's just like when the ship was overhead, I got a feeling that they, you know, it's just, I'm another character in the plan of life that, they were just going about their business and doing what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that in order to participate in their realm, we need to be cleaner and more with intention to learn and not judge, but just to be.
Exactly. It, you know, we talk about making contact, how we have to have pure intent, you know, an open mind, a loving heart, and not be riddled with all the skepticism and belief systems and things, just to experience what is truly there.
Right. Because the one thing about that I've read about humans is they have an emotional thing that a lot of these beings don't have. So it's almost like if we come from a place of love instead of a place of judgment, we muddy the waters if we start judging or coming from fear or hate or anger. And that these beings are somewhat that they want to communicate with us, but not with the mud in the water.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be there with us from the true essence of what we are, from the loving self.
Yeah, the area that you're in, we don't really want to tell exactly where
it is because
we'll have every looky-loo, you know, with a digital camera.
You know, the thing about the mountain is, when I originally was going to go up, I can see things in other dimensions anyway. I have X-ray vision, a lot of things. I could see an area, but I didn't go to that area. I actually intuitively went to a totally different area. So it almost doesn't matter where you are on that mountain. It would be like going to a different part of the city, like L.A., New York, wherever, and you're just going to be in a different part of the city and see a different thing if you go there, if you can clear your mind and be in that dimension.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of things, there's a lot of research in the area where you're in. I know Dr. Jalen Hynek and a lot of top researchers have been in that area, and they've actually witnessed and photographed all kinds of activity. And when you read the research, there's everything there from people actually making contact to giant triangular ships to light spheres to things like intelligent lights that were zipping around the mountain to some very, very tall, thin beings that they saw.
That's what I saw.
And they've actually, I think it's in examining the Earthlight theory. I think it's Greg Long's book covers all this, some of the research up there. But, you know, we watch these strange flashes, multicolored flashes, things moving all over the mountain. And if you could describe the area you're in to, you know, people go, well, those are snowmobiles, or they say those are Jeeps driving around up there. But the problem is that's a wilderness area. You cannot have any vehicle up there whatsoever.
No, it's you could not have a vehicle because this is a very dense forest area where trees fall over trees fall over trees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't walk cross country through this place without walking over 1,000 trees.
Yeah.
So it's very condensed and it's a lot of trees. But the thing is, because these beings live on multi dimensions, those trees don't necessarily get in their way.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was like a human form, they would.
Now, there's lava, sheer lava cliffs there, giant lava. There's a major lava bed that you would have to cross to get to that area that you know, we see quarter-mile to half-mile-sized ships moving from the top of the mountain down over to the area where you're at and crossing these huge lava fields. Can you explain what the lava fields look like to you?
The lava fields are like very sharp boulders piled up on each other, very dangerous if you were to climb over it because they're not smooth and they're rugged and they're like just very jagged. It's not something that you could easily cross, and it would actually take a lot longer to cross it than if you went around it.
Now, these are massive boulder fields that...
Yeah, it's very dangerous.
...that really no vehicle could possibly...
Right.
I don't think a tank, not even
not,
a tank.
No. You couldn't drive over with anything. It's very, very jagged rocks, very big ones, you know, as big as people, and it would virtually be impossible to take any vehicle I know over it, except if you had a helicopter. I mean, it's virtually you could never drive over this stuff.
Yeah, and these helicopters, you know, would be very loud in that area. You couldn't,
right.
You know. And
No. Like when I saw the ship, it was totally silent.
Exactly. When you see these light ships flying over, they make no noise whatsoever. And they're in and out of dimensions. Again, coming in every, like the research is showing, there's massive triangle ships. There's cylinder ships. There's pink ships, gold ships, green ships, you know.
Well,
purple, we've seen blue and purplish colored lights up there. I mean,
forward a time. It's like I was reading Robert Monroe's book, and one thing he said is he came to the Earth and he looked down and there was all these ships around it, and he asked somebody what was going on. He goes, well, this is every 86 million years there's a special event happening. It's not just every 26,000. So it's like there's a very special thing going on right now, and there's a really want and a need to connect with us. You know, that's one thing I got out of Jerry is that I had a strong connection, and I think that's what they want. They want us to connect with them, not come from a place of emotion or fear, but to connect and to understand.
Exactly.
To become part of the whole.
You know, some of the messages that I've been receiving, the telepathic messages from these ETs are intently spiritual. And,
uh-huh.
You know, they talk about, you know, God, and they talk about heaven coming to earth and a great shift that we're going to be undergoing. And
right.
But they explain it a little differently. They call God a force, you know, a consciousness or a force. And they talk about at the core of every galaxy is this creative intelligence, this force or this power. And they're saying that massive waves of energy are emanating from this, from the core of this galaxy, saying we're going to the next level. And and we've watched these massive bands of energy moving through the sky at night, and you can actually see the waves if you relax and soft focus, you know, and start seeing the other, you know, some of the other subtle energies going on. And it's very obvious now that we're under a major transition, a great shift right now. You know, they explained to me, you know, the days of tyranny are over, basically. They're just, you know, coming to a close, that whole frequency or that vibration to maintain that kind of consciousness is coming to an end.
Right.
So it's going to get real interesting in the days to come.
One thing, you know, I've done a lot of emotional clearing in some ways for my emotional body. And that's made it easier for me to have energy pulse through my body. So sometimes I'll just be standing around and suddenly I'll feel this extreme charge run right through my body because it's open and clean enough it can do that. And that's back to the judgment of stuff. Some guys, especially guys, but some women, have a problem with realizing what they feel. And I think people need to clear and clean out as much as they can at this time.
Yeah.
To allow the changes, to allow the energy to go through, the transformation. Otherwise, if you have blocks, it's like having something that hits a wall in you, and it's like a hammer hitting it. And to back up from that is almost a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I think opening up and allowing things to go will allow a shift to happen that is healthy and welcome.
You know, we both just got back from a wedding, which was quite interesting, that my niece was just married. And what I noticed is that a lot of people on our side were very emotional and crying, and even the men were crying. And I mean, I was crying myself too. I had tears coming out of my eyes, and all my cousins and nephews were crying. But you know, it seemed on the other side that they were very holding back, you know,
right.
and and maintaining and making sure that nobody saw them, a bunch of, cowboys and good old boys, on the other side. And I saw over and over that, it's sad that culture, that mindset that doesn't allow you to feel, that feelings are a weakness, or to show any emotions is a weakness, or is very sad in a way, and I just noticed that some people have overcome that and have allowed themselves to feel, and those are the ones that are really having these experiences.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's the bottom line. I always tell people, God is not an intellectual construct. It's a feeling.
Right.
You have to get past the mind into the feelings to really experience the true nature of the source itself. But I mean, I think it's even beyond that, but just to get to the next level, you gotta learn to feel, and flow with the feeling.
That's part of who we are.
Exactly.
It's not a separate entity. And it's not just a female thing, and that's the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Too often I have found that guys will see women claim something. Like, long ago, remember when they used to start wearing pants and guys were going, oh, no, you can't do that?
Mm-hmm.
Women would do things and guys would say, oh, no, that's a female thing, so we can't do that. Well, that's a mistake.
Oh, exactly.
I think a total being, a total man, is total all parts, not just half of a part.
Exactly.
There's a reason that men die before women do, and it's partly because they're so full of stuff they can't hold on to it anymore.
Yeah, they don't want to let it go, so they're constricted in the heart, and so they have heart attacks.
Right.
But, I thought it was amazing because, a lot of these people are very religious people, and they really believe in Jesus, but Jesus wept continuously.
Right.
And it's very well documented that he was a very passionate person. In the old Jewish scriptures, he was constantly chastised for open displays of passion with Mary, and he was constantly weeping in the wilderness over humanity and the condition of humanity and what was going on. So,
right.
So I mean, the very entity they regard as the highest of the high, didn't have any problems showing his emotion.
Right. Right. Because we are, that's just part of who we are.
Exactly. It's like, okay, we're going to beat Jesus or the Romans, I think this weekend was just such a phenomenal event. I'm sure it was life-changing. Mm-hmm. For you, especially going up on the mountain, but
it really was. It, from the contacts that I remade to having her in my arm and seeing that here was this being, Jerry, the love of my life, still there in my arms, and then I went into the physical and she wasn't there, but I just could feel her, and
mm-hmm.
so and seeing these other beings and what was going on just opened my eyes to all the possibilities that exist around us.
Yeah, my father passed away, and everybody was crying and upset and really sad, and before he crossed over, he came to me over and over again, and then after he crossed over, he continuously came to me, and he's just a thought away.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't really weep. I wasn't sad or anything. I was so happy for him where he was, and the body, the totally unlimited nature of the world he was in and everything, I could not grieve. And people said, oh, you're in denial, and I said, no, I'm not. I don't have any sadness. The only sadness I have is for the people behind that can't experience what I experience. And I feel their grief, but that's it. I have no grief because I know without a doubt that they're just, a frequency away. They're right alongside of us at all times and just basically a loving thought away.
Wow. Yeah, for me it was like I was going through a lot of emotion because of her, but when that happened I realized what my grief was about wasn't about her death, but that every night I would go see her and then I'd have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And what I got was, she's, like you say, just a thought away.
Exactly.
I mean, our relationship is ongoing. It didn't stop, and it's actually becoming more loving and more kind and more connected than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's changed.
Great.
You know, it's just different.
Yeah, it you know, some of these experiences happen to us just to open us up,
right.
You know, to these other dimensions, these other realities, and help us in our own soul evolution, and we can make a great thing out of it, or it can be a real bonus, or we can, you know, be a victim and drown in our own tears, you know.
Right.
You know, it's just how we frame it, the experience, and choose,
right.
You know, and make a choice concerning the experience as to how we handle it.
Right.
That's amazing. Is Joel there by chance?
Hold on.
I don't know if
yeah,
Joel...
Yeah, well, I'll get him for you.
Okay, we'd love to.
Okay, here.
I've got another friend here that's with the New Energy Movement.
It's, hi, James. This is Joel.
Hey, Joel. Glad to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. It's my privilege.
Yeah, we're going to switch a little bit here. We kind of covered the conference and a lot of the experiences here that people had. I know you were here for part of the conference anyway, and...
Right, that was a remarkable event, James, and I was thoroughly impressed by the slate of speakers that you had here and the number that were in attendance. I mean, it looked like there must have been approaching 400 people here, and just from my own perspective, having come and visited you here at the sanctuary over the last 5 years, you know, I think maybe I've been here where there's been a crowd of 20 or 30 occasionally, but boy, to see a crowd, you know, 15 times that was pretty remarkable. And I could see that everyone was very, very much involved and into the messages that were being delivered by the speakers here. And clearly there were many who were having their own personal experiences during the Sky Watches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the... we got some pretty amazing photos. They're up on the site now. If people want to go and just click on As You Wish Talk Radio, and I believe Don has just a couple of the photos up there of one of the metallic craft that was hovering over the field, and then some of the light spheres that were all around the people during the Skywatch. The one of the things I wanted to talk about is one of the programs you're working on, and that's the New Energy Movement.
Right. Well, the New Energy Movement is an organization that was founded by Brian O'Leary, who was a former Apollo scientist astronaut, and also in conjunction with Alden Bryant, Alden being a gentleman down in the Berkeley area. And Alden was, many consider him the godfather of the modern environmental movement. Alden inspired the UN motion that resulted in the Rio Climate Summit, and then from that was spawned the Kyoto Accord. So he has a long history as an activist in the environmental scene. Brian O'Leary and Alden teamed up to birth the New Energy Movement, and I was privileged to be invited by Brian O'Leary to join the board of directors of that organization, and now I serve as president of New Energy Movement. And what the organization is, it's set up as a nonprofit. It has a 501c3 status and is designed to educate the public, policymakers, the media, academics, and the investment community as well about the existence of new energy technologies that are clean and quantumly advanced past the standard renewables that we normally think of. For instance, most people, when they hear about renewable energy, clean energy, they think about solar and biofuels and tidal power, things like that. Well, what we're talking about is a whole other class of technologies that are a quantum leap past that. And these would be technologies that tap into what might be called the zero point field or the quantum flux field Some may tap into the magnetic field of our planet. Others use advanced chemistries. For instance, there have been discovered new ways of manipulating the hydrogen atom to release an enormous amount of energy that previously was not known. And these technologies, by and large, are not understood by mainstream academics. They are type of technologies where there are proofs of principle at the laboratory level, but the theories to go along with the empirical results still are in their infancy. And just the way that the science tends to progress, especially when we're talking about science that's very much in league with government grants and corporate support, it tends to require very well accepted theories of the various principles before there's any of the investment community that comes forward to marshal a technology out into the public domain. With these new technologies that New Energy Movement is trying to educate about, those theories still have not been well developed. And as a result, there's still a lot of controversy that surrounds the field as far as what are these new physics principles that are being tapped into. There is no doubt that there are empirical results. These things are real. They generate power, and they generate more power than is required to initiate the process or to initiate the reaction. So in that sense, they're considered over unity energy technologies.
Now, have you heard the latest? I've heard a lot of buzz about it, but nobody seems to know about the Tesla car that I guess is down in the Bay Area that somebody just came out with.
I heard just a brief snippet of that, but I haven't yet had a chance to dig into that.
Yeah, I was wondering what the power source behind, is it fuel-less energy, or is it, I know it has something to do with electricity, but...
That particular device, I'm not familiar with, James. I tell you what is a very good resource to check out that normally has a wonderful update on all these emerging energy technologies, and that is New Energy Congress. And which any of the listeners can tap into on the web by going to www.newenergycongress.org, and what you'll find there is what has been set up as the top 100 new energy technologies, and it's a very up to the minute listing of the most progressive and promising of these emerging energy technologies.
Yeah, a lot of these businesses seem to like disappear, right? When they have their breakthrough, as soon as they go public, their families are threatened, their cars are bombed or houses or you name it.
Well, that's certainly been the sad case throughout, at least since the turn of the century. I mean, we know how Tesla himself was suppressed. Once it was found that his technologies for allowing wireless transmission of electricity, of course, was very highly threatening to the vested interests who had a monopoly on copper wire. Those captains of industry were much more interested in being able to sell wire so that electricity would flow through something that they could sell and have the power metered. They were not interested at all to suddenly have this genius come along named Tesla who says, well, we don't need to do any of that. We can have essentially free energy for everybody. Of course, his funding was immediately withdrawn. He died penniless. And after his death, the FBI absconded with all kinds of records that most are believed to still not have resurfaced. So clearly there were a lot of shenanigans going on with Tesla, and that's continued to the present day with a number of scientists who've been suppressed, intimidated, have had tremendous difficulties with funding for their projects, or have had their technologies bought out by large energy interests and then shelved. And I don't know of several instances where that's occurred.
That seems to be a common occurrence. The other, I've seen there's two major hurdles to go over, and that is, you know, the boys that want to keep everybody enslaved through dependency, you know, they really don't want any of these fields and technologies or, you know, people to become sovereign and free, because when you're when you have all this free time, you start really thinking about life and, you know, and how we're living it and things of that nature. And they don't really want people to be awakening, you know, because then they can't be controlled.
Yeah, you are right on the mark there. The whole concept of having free energy really is the same thing as having freedom. I mean, if you look at what the way our society is structured right now, and it is so entwined with the whole concept of materialism and what I have is who I am, and we see that despite our technology and the promise decades ago of a 20-hour work week, now we find that it's most typical people working 60 hours a week, both husbands and wife, and kids being shipped off to daycare. You know, and that's hardly the promise of what was bantered about several decades ago, when we knew that a lot of these new technologies, like the personal computer and advanced electronics, on and on, were just around the corner. So that promise has gone unfulfilled, and now we find that our society seems largely enslaved. And to introduce technologies that produce free energy, and be able to go off the grid system and truly have energy independence, I think is a metaphor for the freedom of thought, the freedom to consider a new way civilization could evolve on our planet if people only have the opportunity to step out of the box that we're in right now, and that seems to chain us, because the messages is again and again thrown at us from media, from the supposed leaders of our government, from the corporate interest, and it's hard to avoid the bombardment of the commercial message.
Oh yeah, it seems that you know, the program now is to keep everybody in survival, you know, just totally worrying about how you're going to make ends meet and keeping up with the Joneses and everything else. And then on top of that, the fear message, you know, of, you know, the terrorism, the bombings, and everything else. And so if you can keep people down into those lower frequencies, you know, they're not going to awaken. And that seems to be the program over and over and over, is to keep people in fear, keep them enslaved through dependency, and that way you can keep control over the masses. And I think this fearless energy is just the one thing that, it's going to give everybody a big pay raise and a lot of extra time to get in touch with their other creative endeavors and, you know, read and philosophize and whatever, you know. It's like, you know, it'll be a quantum leap in evolution once this comes out.
Well, you're right, and I think it can be said safely that we have the means to provide for the basic material sustenance of every human being on this planet. And any child could tell you that the way you do that is by sharing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not very good at applying that lesson that all of us learned as children in the adult world. Somehow we've become enmeshed in this this way of thinking that has us looking at people who are down the street or of a different color or live across a border or speak a different language or go to a different place of worship, that they are separate from us, that they are not as worthy as we are of having things that bring joy and security to our lives. But yet children would do these things naturally. They would share, and they're very receptive to that lesson. somehow the our adult world has not learned how to apply that. But once we learn that most basic lesson, and we provide for the material sustenance of all the people on this planet, then very, very quickly, I think that we can see an evolution in our society that can take us so far, including the elimination of war, reaching out from this planet to the other planets. Certainly there's life all throughout this universe, and I think if anyone, seriously considers it, they would reach the same conclusion, whether or not they've had their own personal experience of off-Earth cultures, as you readily provide for people here at the retreat center. But we have so many things that we could do if we just exercise the collective will.
Exactly. We have gatherings up here sometimes with kids, and we're doing sweat lodges where a lot of the younger kids would get involved and with their parents. And, you pass the talking stick, and everybody's even. Everybody's equal with the talking stick. Mm-hmm. And these kids would just embarrass the hell out of their parents. When you give them the stick, they would say, "What is," they had no idea how brilliant their children are, and the basics. They still have the basics that we've intellectually dismissed. And, I think if you took a bunch of these kids and just cleaned out, the House of Representatives, Senators, and the Senate, and things of that nature, and put these kids in there, the planet would be a much better place.
Oh, I think you're exactly right about that. And I'll tell you, and who I would also put in there as some advisors to them is our wise elder women as well.
Exactly.
I think that there's something to be said for the wisdom of the matrons in our societies who have been marginalized, unfortunately, by the way our culture is so youth oriented and instant gratification oriented and material focused that we've lost so much of what can be contributed by our wise elders. It's I love the story that was recounted to me again here just a few weeks ago about how the Iroquois Confederation handled their government affairs. And as it's been recounted to me, the women, the wise elder women of the Iroquois Confederation would elect the chiefs. And they would only elect those men to be chief who they knew had the maturity and wisdom to lead. And it was ingrained in them very deeply that no decision would be made by the council unless they considered the effect on the seventh generation removed. Mm-hmm. So imagine the difference between that society where they were thinking about should we do this or should we do that based on how it would affect people who wouldn't even be born for another couple hundred years. And you contrast that with our current society where so much of what we do is based on quarter-to-quarter earnings for Wall Street analysts. And that seems to drive so much of our money, money-obsessed culture. So we have an opportunity to tap into the wisdom of our elders and also to listen to some of the profound thinking that comes from these young ones who are being born now, because there's something they have to say. And I don't know about you, James, but I see these young ones now, and it seems to me that they have an intellectual capacity and a spiritual capacity that is greater than certainly my generation, and I'm very encouraged by that, because I think when they step into leadership, that there's going to be lots of changes we can have.
Exactly. I mean, we have this profit-driven society right now that even at the expense of humanity and the earth, and people can intellectually validate almost anything in the way things are going right now. But, you know, you ask the children what's going on, they're just very blunt about it. You know,
yeah.
They said they're sick of seeing what's happening to the planet and, you know, the lack of love and the lack of joy. And you know, they know we made a wrong turn somewhere and we've got to correct this very soon because they can feel it that, you know, a very big shift is on the horizon and we'd better start making course corrections right away and align with, you know, these new energies coming in.
Yeah. Well, you can't fool the children with politico speak,
mm-hmm.
or with things where only a narrow vested interest is served. A child who looks out the window of a car driving down a road where there's a clear cut very evident will simply say, why are we cutting down all those trees? Why are we doing that? And they see and they react instantly that wow, that seems devastating to the forest. It's ugly and it just doesn't feel right. And they'll put the hammer right on the nail there for you. That's just one example of what my own children have done so many times.
Yeah, and the other people just see bored feet. You know,
right.
They look at a tree and they see bored feet and how much it is a bored foot, and they've got their calculator out, and they go, "Wow, I'm gonna be able to buy that brand new car, that brand new truck."
Right.
And
unfortunately, so many who are in the gravy train that comes from the resource depletion activities that go on our planet, so often, and I would say probably more often is the rule than the exception. Those folks who are part of the gravy train have never been in an old growth forest. They've never seen what a temple of giant Douglas firs or redwoods is like. I mean, there's just a remarkable energy there that anyone who's there gets a sense that it's something sacred. I think the same thing goes with those who are out on the sea and they see a whale breach or see a pod of orcas or dolphins. They wonder how can we possibly be devastating so much of our marine life to the point where these great creatures may no longer even exist. It seems unfathomable. But unfortunately, because of the separation consciousness that we're steeped in as humans, when something is out of sight, it tends to be out of mind, and it's very easy to rationalize our actions as a result, even if that means that you are destroying another species or even destroying another human.
I think a lot of it goes back to corporations and accountants, and you know, they look at everything in numbers and profit, and you know, when they see a forest, you know, they see bored feet. When they see an ocean area, they see pound of fish, how many pounds of fish can they pull out of there?
Yeah.
You know, and the bottom line is that there's no regard for the devastation that they're causing, because again, it all goes back to just a profit consciousness.
Yeah.
And at the expense of humanity, the earth, which really I've seen we're right back to the old program, the old paradigm in ancient Atlantis, where we had the sons of Belial who all they cared about was themselves, and they wanted to use power to control people and overpower others, and very selfish. And then they had the law of one, and they saw the oneness of creation in everyone and everything, and totally served all of creation. And it seems we're right back at that same paradigm where you've got the profit, the war profiteers, the disease profiteers, the people that are profiteering on the destruction of the environment, just not caring have any respect whatsoever for life. And then you've got the other, the law of one people out there again saying, hey, we're all connected, all life is connected, what we do to each other and what we do to the planet affects the source itself. It's like time to wake up. But we're right in the throes of that same experience, and there were four worlds before us that totally destroyed themselves. We're the fifth experiment, hoping to get it right this time, and I think they're still throwing to the dice as how it's going to unfold on this one.
Well, you bring up a thought in me there, James, with the mention of these previous civilizations. You know, I remember when I first even became aware of you and the service that you were providing and allowing any who would come could have their own personal experience of these extraordinary activities that are going on in our skies and the spiritual experiences that people could have here as well. And where I first became aware of you was at a conference down in Berkeley in the fall of 2000, and it was called the Ancient Wisdom Conference. And one of the things they were talking about there was forbidden archaeology, which I was not aware of that terminology at the time, but it was a very, very compelling presentation about all these discoveries that are occurring on our planet right now, mm-hmm. of civilizations where they're finding building structures under the sea in many areas of the world, like in the Black Sea, in the Eastern Mediterranean, along the coast of India, off the coast of Japan, and in the Caribbean, where these monolithic structures and literal cities are at depths that can only be accounted for if those civilizations existed tens and even hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Okay.
To me it was so startling that how come this is not front page news everywhere? This is just remarkable.
And same reason why the UFOs aren't. We're running out of time here, so we're hitting the end of the hour, so I want to thank you so much, Joel, for coming on the show.
James, if I can make one quick plug for the New Energy Movement.
Yes, make it quick.
Yeah, please go and check out www.newenergymovement.org and
okay.
See what we're all about.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Joel, for coming on the show. And this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off, and thank you so much for spending this quality time with these wonderful guests, and hope to see you soon next Saturday night. Good night.